When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. You know, it's episode 130, I think, yeah? And maybe time to start investigating doing a new intro, not the music, but my little lead-in. It might be getting a little stale after this many episodes, but if nobody says any different, I'll just stick with it. So, did I phrase that right? If nobody agrees with that previous statement, I'll just stick with what I've been doing. So, what am I thinking about today? Got another little audio essay based on something that's been on my mind in recent weeks, starting with Comics Are Great, episode 14, where I talked with Dave Roman, Raina Telgemeier, and David Malky. That's at comicsaregreat.com/CAG14 if you haven't listened to it. There's been some pretty interesting conversations going on that show where I think that CAG is turning into a really nice cousin to art and story with a lot of different voices in the mix. So if you haven't checked it out, you might want to give it a listen. But in any case, I'm going to summarize what I was thinking about based on the discussions I had on that show and on some subsequent shows where I've been talking with a lot of different kinds of creators with a lot of different backgrounds. People who all have been experiencing their own sense of, their own kind of success in their field. They're achieving things, which is what most of us are after when we get involved in the creative arts, right? We all want to achieve some kind of success, even though our definitions all differ, and that's a good thing. And I've been trying to, through these conversations with these people, start painting a picture of the kind of mindset that is common to the kind of mindset that is consistent amongst all these different creators, if there are any shared pieces of DNA in the way they think about the world. If we all agree that there's no one path to this mythical thing called success, then there at least must be, at least I suspect, there's some kind of shared mindset that leads them to find their particular idiosyncratic path. I may be wrong on this. I'm not a scientist. I'm a cartoonist and a teacher. And I think it's the latter of the two that is driving me to try to look for some kind of a rubric, some kind of a measurement tool to see how we can align our thinking to be better equipped to find those inroads. Or is it just innate talent? Is it just DNA? Is it just something that is just in your genes and you can't help but think that way? I don't want to get into that. I'm going to go for the notion that our brains are programmable and we can change our ways of thinking if we really want to. To quote the Iron Giant, you are who you choose to be. And this leads me to another anecdote before I leap into the main body of the essay is, as many of you know, I am very itchy about the notion of doing top 10 lists, top 5 lists. And for a lot of reasons, I won't go into them in too much detail here, but I was sharing this with Rob Stenzinger of ArtGeekZoo.com, who was actually on a Thunder Punch special a while back, and on a couple episodes of Art and Story. He was on Art and Story Live. He was on a recent episode of Art and Story proper, recent meaning like within the last couple months. And I was sharing with him this reticence, or this hesitation, this kind of discomfort with the notion of making top 5 lists. But Rob, being the kind and intuitive soul that he is, said, well, you know, I can see the value in doing such a thing because, after all, you are prioritizing content into bite-sized chunks, which the brain likes. The brain likes to know, what are the instructions? What do I need to know? And he said to me, well, you know, and I know that that's just one person's top 5. To which I responded, yes, but I think about that 19-year-old or that person who's like brand new to the creative arts but is interested in diving in, and they don't know yet that there's a lot of intelligent fakers out there. We should be respectful of that audience as well. And what's more is I, you know, in a general sense, I think that we should be respectful to all of our audiences by not trying to create prioritized packets. So Rob met me halfway. And by the way, I don't want to put words in Rob's mouth. He wasn't sticking up for top 10 lists. He was just saying that he was, as I understood it, he was appreciating the usefulness of such a thing. Okay. Not saying that everybody should do it, but just that I can see why it would be a useful tool in delivering information. So anyway, so Rob met me halfway and he said, well, what if you did things where it was a non-list assemblage of concerns or thoughts? So it's not in list form, it's not prioritized, and it's clearly not the end all top, just do these three things and you'll be successful. And I was delighted by this idea. I thought it was a terrific way to think about delivering lists of information in not in any kind of an order, and clearly as being a starting point to a larger investigation. That I can get behind. So here's what I've amassed for over the past couple of weeks in trying to decode or to put together a rough outline of the kinds of thinking that I notice successful people in cartooning do. This isn't about successful strategies to becoming a financial powerhouse in the comics industry. This isn't like, oh, just get your AdWords account set up and go onto Amazon affiliate program and get your book printed through Lulu.com and X, Y, and Z, and boom, you're a success. This isn't about the actual strategy. This is more of like the sort of like the kind of philosophy that I see, I pick up on from these kinds of people. And here it is in non-list form. So here's, again, not in any order, interest in other mediums. All the people that I talk to who I find are doing things that I think are very interesting, things that are of significance in comics, have an equal passion in one other arena, whether it's technology, whether it's literature, whether it's science, whether it's history. They aren't just a one-note person. They don't just love comics and comics alone, and they only read comics, and that's the world they live in. They have another world that they wade in as well. Now, maybe they don't always love this other arena as much as comics, or maybe that arena is an equal love to comics. It's not like comics is a hobby to them. It's just that there's another facet of their life where they're doing investigations, and there is a consistency in how they learn from that other world and bring that insight into comics. And I think that's what gives their works a unique kind of character to it. Like, let's take David Malky, for instance. He has a passion for 19th century publishing, like the works published in the 19th century. Now, granted, in his comic Wondermark, that's what he's using to make this comic. But that's what makes that comic unique. That's what makes it speak to a unique audience or a niche audience. And, well, not even a niche, because he's actually pretty successful at this thing. But he's found new audiences that traditional comics publishing, traditional meaning the American companies, or even going into European and manga companies. This is stuff they're just not doing. He found a completely new kind of comic. And what's more is he found a very unique kind of sense of humor in his investigations of this thing that he's passionate about, 19th century published works, articles, newspapers, magazines, catalogs, etc. So there's an example to back that up. An expansive view of their medium is the next one in no particular order on this non-list list. What do I mean by that? As I was talking about in the Tribes episode of Thunder Punch Daily a couple episodes back, is that one of the chief sins in my imaginary tribe is to say, if you don't subscribe to X, Y, and Z in terms of standards of artistic merit in comics, you're not a cartoonist. In other words, if you didn't take an art class in your life, if you're just using Microsoft Word to create images for your comic, and you don't even know how to use balloon tails properly, in quotes, properly yet, you can't be called a cartoonist, and your work cannot be called comics. People who I think are successful are people who think of anything that follows the baseline definition of comics, static images delivered in deliberate sequence to convey a story or mood, to paraphrase Scott McCloud. The people who accept all forms tend to be a little bit more creative in their approaches towards all of their work in terms of their marketing, in terms of the kinds of stories they want to do, and in terms of their ability to network. If you are closed off from certain kinds of circles because you have a very rigid definition of what comics are, if you didn't study Winsor McCay, you clearly haven't done your homework. You're not a real cartoonist. you're excluding people on top of everything else. And that exclusion can prevent you from making a really dynamite connection, which could also help your career, a friendship, which could mean somebody who is popular in other circles pointing their audience at your work. So there's a lot of ramifications in my mind. I'm not just philosophically opposed to this idea. There's real practical implications for having a rigid view of what comics are and what they aren't. So to have as wide a definition as possible, I noticed, is a common trait amongst these people. Clear sense of mission, 1,000-foot view, and where you want to be in 5 years. Both, right? A lot of these people can say from the drop of a hat, just ask them, where you want to be in 5 years? And they can paint you a pretty clear picture of that. But they also have a more abstracted view of where they want to be. What do they want to do with their work? Is it as simple as saying, like, I want to be famous? Well, that can mean a lot of things. There have been some terrible people who have been famous, and there have been some wonderful people who have been famous. What do you mean by fame? Do you want to be internet famous, or do you want to be TV famous or movie famous, right? Having a 1,000-foot view, but that is a clear picture of some specific things that you want to do. A lot of these people can articulate that. And so I think that that's probably a good thing to think about as well is, and this is something I've tried to do in the last couple of years, is really have a clear definition of where I want to be in the next 5 years. Because I'll tell you what, one of the things that's come out of, and this is sort of an aside thing, the teaching stuff again, but I just went to a meeting yesterday to talk with some community partners about some new projects that they were interested in having me do for them. And because I have a clear sense of where I want to be in 5 years, it was very easy for me to say, I really don't want to participate in this, but this other thing you're proposing, that sounds interesting. Let's talk more about that. It was easy to navigate through the meeting and sort of like pair off any kind of dead ends in the conversation because I could quickly measure that against where I wanted to be in 5 years. And the same thing goes for choosing what jobs you take on in comics, what kind of either, whether you're going to work with a publisher, whether you're going to pursue some kind of online comic that you own, measure that against your five-year goal, right? And this is something that, hey, I don't want to come across as being the guy at the lectern who's pointing at the audience saying, do as I do, because this is, when it comes to my publishing career, I don't have a clear picture of where I want to be in 5 years. And this has been a problem for me that I need to address, is that I have that 1,000-foot view, but I don't have that five-year view of where I want to be. So I need to really sit down and try to map that out and try to visualize it. I think that's going to help a lot in helping me get focused for some comics projects that I want to take on in the next 6 months. Last one for today. There's more on my list here, but I'm going to keep refining this list as time goes on. But the last one for the today of my non-prioritized, non-list assemblage of characterizations of the successful cartoonist is curiosity. A curious person versus an incurious person when you talk to them. A curious person will actually ask you questions about yourself. A curious person will, when you say, express something that you are excited about, they'll ask you to tell them more. Not just to keep the conversation rolling, but because they're interested in the people around them. They're interested in what's going on in the world around them because there's always around every corner a new inspiration, a new idea that can help change their outlook or inform their own personal paths and careers and whatnot. An incurious person is the person who waits for you to finish talking so then they can keep talking, saying their pitch. Again, I'm going to point at another comics are great, and I'm only pointing at these just because, like I said, there's been some great conversations on there. Episode 17. I believe, with Ryan Estrada and, or is it 16? No, 17 with Ryan Estrada and Janie Ho. So that'd be comicsaregreat.com/CAG17. I don't even know if that's up on my site yet. I know the YouTube video is up. I can just look on the site right now. Yeah, actually, 16 was the latest episode I posted. I got to post 17 soon. But anyway, one of the things Ryan Estrada talked about is like when the difference between good marketers and bad marketers is that good marketers have a bit of a conspiratorial kind of thing. Like they're on your side. They want to make you happy no matter what the boss says. A bad marketer waits for you to finish talking so they can continue on with their pitch, not even responding to anything that you said. That's like a sort of an analogy for the kind of thinking that is present between a person who is curious and incurious. one of my best friends I have ever had, Mary Jo Finney, who works at the University of Michigan. She's one of my best teaching friends. Really great personal inspiration to me. Everybody around her is interesting to her in some way or another. Now, sometimes that interest is polite interest, and sometimes it's a very sincere interest. But in any case, she's always collecting information from the world around her and from all the people around her. And again, this isn't some kind of like sinister Machiavellian kind of like collecting data so that she can use it against people or that so she can steal their ideas, but more or less of like she's hungry for information all the time. She's curious about everything, and she throws out what she doesn't need, but you cast a wide net, you're more likely to collect good information from people, good ideas from people. And again, I'm not talking about ideas for a t-shirt that you can post on Threadless and steal somebody else's ideas. I'm talking about like general career management kind of stuff, or opportunities for new publishing methods or new kind of web platforms, new ways of networking, all the different layers of storytelling, or even like a great book that completely changed your mind on how storytelling works, a completely new way to look at storytelling. Okay. So it could be something like that. If it wasn't for a sense of curiosity, I never would have discovered the book Gemma Bovary by Posey Simmons, which I've talked about a lot in the show. I can put a link in the show notes to it. Fantastic book that not only does a really neat experimentation with the comics medium by having comics intermingled with prose, but she found a way to have three different narrators in the tale, and she uses a visual cue in having handwritten sections from the voice of one narrator, typeset text for another narrator, and comics for a different narrator, and she found a way to weave them all together so that the transitions are actually very natural. And it's extremely exciting to me to see this, both from somebody who is just like a general comics advocate, somebody who's a storyteller and was always interested in finding new modes of expression within our medium, and just in somebody who's interested in good entertainment. So if somebody had told me about that and I said, oh, that sounds cool, maybe I'll check that out, done, you know, I wouldn't have actually read it, I wouldn't have been inspired by it, and it wouldn't have excited my curiosity about more interesting things going on in comics. So curiosity is a big one. We've talked about it a lot in Art and Story, but it cannot be underlined enough. So there's my non-prioritized list for now. Just a few little seeds to plant in your brain to think about today as you think about, if you're not where you want to be. Oh, here's a final thought on the whole thing. I'm not going to attribute this quote, but one of the things I do is another sort of data collection thing in my life is that, you know, my phone's always on me and I have the Evernote app on my phone. And whenever I hear something that is, oh, God, that's quotable, that is such a great summary statement for something that I think about a lot or I talk about a lot on my shows, and I'll quickly jot that down to my Evernote. I have a note in there called quotes, and I wrote this one down because it was so great. I was talking with a cartoonist friend who said, and this is a cartoonist friend who is experiencing a lot more success than I am. This person is in a place that a lot of us would like to be, but this person still said, my 5-year-old self is disappointed with where I am, you know? So wherever we are, you know, it's like the old saying, the highest point of existence is where you're currently standing. You know, it's like, no matter where you are, you always wish you could be a little bit better after all. And if you are experiencing that emotion, then I like to go back to this non-prioritized list of things. This is one of the reasons I'm trying to characterize, the successful cartoonist as a way to remind myself, okay, instead of beating yourself up, instead of feeling a bunch of self-loathing about where you are, let's focus once again on what your tool set is to move a little closer to that place that that supposedly you'll be happy in. Presumably you'll be happy there, but who knows? You may not. No guarantees in this thing called life after all, right? All right, so on that silly existential note, who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We couldn't do it without you. I'm trying to think if there's any more announcements to make. I'm on the Google Plus now, if any of you guys got invitations. It really, I haven't been publicizing this anywhere just because it makes me a little sad that they closed off the invitation. So it's like, what's the point of having it if I'm going to tell people where to find me and they can't actually use it yet? Yeah, it's fun that I get to play with it now, but I'd rather play with it at full strength, you know, to see what it can really do. But Well, what are you going to do? I guess this is their way to build interest in it. But if you want to look for me on the Googles, I'm on the Google Plus. If you have an account, you can, I guess, what is it? Is it follow me there? Is that what they call it? Friend me there? Add me to your circle? There you go. Something like that. So anyway, I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember everybody.
As you saw in today's story, people can change.
Right, Teela. Sibylline had always been an evil sorceress, but she was able to change her ways for the better. Maybe there's something about yourself that you don't like. A bad habit, maybe.
It's easy to say I can't change, but the truth is, you can change almost any behavior if you really want to.
And the first step is saying to yourself, I can't.